Broadcasting from our studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the business of Southern sports, or as we like to call it, the boss. The boss is presented by Dirty Girl Mixers. Get your mix fix. And by RecTech Grills. Join the RecTech lifestyle. Now, here is the host of the boss, Roger Maness.
Hi there, I'm Roger Maness, and welcome to a special edition of our show. University of Georgia Director of Athletics Greg McGarity has announced his retirement effective at the end of the year. His senior deputy, Josh Brooks, will take over the duties on an interim basis January 1st of 2021. In the meantime, a search committee will work on finding a permanent successor to McGarity, and Brooks is a candidate to fill the spot himself. But that brings us back to Greg. He has been on the job in this capacity for 10 years, but his Bulldog ties go way back. He is a Georgia graduate and even played tennis for Georgia back in the 1970s. He worked in a variety of capacities in the Georgia Athletic Department early in his career. Then he went to work at the University of Florida for 18 years, where he rose to the number two man in the Gators Athletic Department. Then his alma mater called him home in 2010. Under McGarity's leadership, the annual budget of the Athletic Association grew from $89 million in 2010 to $153 million today, and he has overseen more than $200 million in facility improvements during his tenure. It can be a thankless job when you are the one hiring and firing coaches, looking out for the welfare of student athletes, trying to win championships, all while maintaining fiscal responsibility. And of course, when you do want to retire, the COVID pandemic hits. So out of a sense of duty and loyalty, you decide to stick around for a few more months to help weather the storm. That's what Greg McGarity did. In this special podcast, we will hear from McGarity and University of Georgia President Dr. Jerry Moorhead as they meet the media via Zoom to discuss Greg's departure, his legacy, and the search for a replacement. The news conference is moderated by Claude Felton, the Senior Associate Athletic Director in charge of communications at the University of Georgia.
Right. Good morning, everyone. Appreciate you calling in on this Zoom call with UGA President Jerry W. Moorhead and J. Reed Parker, Director of Athletics, Greg McGarity. We'll begin and ask President Moorhead for a few opening remarks, and then we'll ask the same of Greg, and then we'll go to your questions. So we'll turn the Zoom at this point over to President Moorhead.
Well, thank you, Claude, and it's good to see all of you, even if it is a distance these days. I look forward to us all being back together at some point, hopefully in the relatively near future. I think today should be about celebrating the legacy of Greg McGarity. And I'm so pleased to see that many of the sports writers have already begun to do that, because in my view, the last 10 years under Greg's leadership have been extraordinary. And some of you have already commented about many of his accomplishments. But I think what I would like to say about Greg tells you a lot about what I hope we will have in the next athletic director, which is someone that's loyal to the institution, that always puts the institution and the athletic association ahead of his own personal interests, and someone who is focused on making things better. And I think if you look back on Greg's legacy in Georgia athletics, he's made things better. He's kept the athletic association and the university aligned. And he has been incredibly loyal to the institution and to me in my role as president. I've appreciated this relationship. As I said yesterday, I wish it had gone on a little longer. And even as late as last week, I tried to once again talk him out of making this decision right now. But I'm afraid Cheryl has a little bit more clout than I do. And I think she's ready for him to get on with the next stage in their life together. So I just want to thank Greg for his extraordinary work. And I hope all of you will have an opportunity to write some great stories about what he's accomplished, because I think he deserves that. And when this pandemic is over, we'll obviously then have an appropriate time to recognize Greg and Cheryl as they should be recognized.
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, well, thank you, President Moorhead. And I'm going to kind of throw it back on you. You know, we've worked together for 7 years now, and I can't think of anyone better to lead this university. You know, the president's hobby is the University of Georgia. There's no golf, no tennis, and what he's done to elevate this institution, and really to be a tremendous steward for college athletics with his service to on the NCAA Board of Governors and the Executive Committee and his SEC relationships with Commissioner Sankey. He is a true big-time player in college athletics. And as athletic director, to have him represent the University of Georgia and the SEC and all these endeavors is invaluable. And I can't tell you, we've had a lot of fun. We've had a lot of laughs. We've gone through some tough times together, but the relationship is stronger every day. And I really appreciate his service, not only to Georgia, but to athletics and our student athletes. So President Moorhead, thank you for giving me the opportunity and letting me stay in the chair. 10 years is a long time for any athletic director to be in one place at one time, but I appreciate the opportunity to serve, and it's been a great ride, and have enjoyed working with almost everyone on this call for the Hollywood Squares here. But hopefully that you'll recognize the great job our student athletes and coaches have done, and you know, I've just tried to lead and kind of stay out of the way and let our coaches excel and our student athletes. So I'll end with that, Claude, and we'll just go to some questions.
All right, let's go to the questions, and we'll go. I'll call on you two at a time. Let's begin with Charles Odom from Associated Press, and then we'll go to Seth Emerson with The Athletic.
Greg, President Moorhead mentioned trying to talk to you as recently as last week about changing your mind. As I understand it, you've been talked out of this before in previous years. Can you talk about those previous deliberations and what was different this time?
Well, Charles, when you come back to your alma mater, you want to leave it a little bit better. And there were some situations. We were ready to do things earlier, but COVID came along, and we just knew that wasn't the right time to go through any change. The president had enough on his hands to navigate everything he has to navigate, and I certainly didn't want to add to that. And we thought initially that COVID may be on the downturn by this time, but obviously it's still with us and everything. But I just didn't want him to have to worry about athletics, and wanted to lead us through this time. And I really appreciate Cheryl's patience, because as I told all our staff and everything, that we relocated, bought a home in Florida, and Cheryl's been down there since July, fixing the place up and renovating some areas. And I've been down there as often as I can. But once you've been married 42 years, life as a bachelor is not a lot of fun. So the president's right. Cheryl trumped the president in this situation. And so good things will be in store for the future.
For Jerry, I know that you don't want to entertain search questions, but let me try it this way. How did you, with Josh going into the interim role, and clearly everyone expects him to be a candidate, how did you balance that? Did you think about that this is a tryout for him, or did you think about that this may be kind of awkward to have him in that position as a candidate?
Well, definitely not awkward, because I think what's most important right now is to maintain stability in the senior leadership of athletics. I think one of the great things we have right now is a really strong senior leadership team. And by installing both Josh and Doris into the two leadership positions on an interim basis, I wanted to send a signal to the entire athletic organization, that we are strong, that we're stable, that I have confidence in the individuals that Greg has put in senior leadership positions. You know, I give you an example. Will Lawler, in my opinion, is the best guy in America doing his job in compliance. We were lucky enough to lure him away from the SEC, where he was doing that for the conference, to come to UGA. And there's no one better than Will. And I think Kirby Smart or Tom Crean or Joni Taylor or anyone would tell you that. And so I want to send a really strong signal to this senior leadership team that whoever is the next athletic director, I have great confidence in the people that Greg has assembled to run the athletic association.
Right. Let's go to Mark Weiser from the Athens Banner-Herald, and then Anthony Dasher from UGASports.com.
Greg, where is your home in Florida that you bought, and what do you envision your day-to-day life being like in 2021? Will you have any role in athletics, like from a consultant standpoint?
Well, first question is Ponte Vedra Beach, and second question, I don't know. Mark, I've been so focused on this role, and I really haven't really given much thought to other opportunities. You know, I'm not one that's going to sit around the house. Sheriff's already told me that. I've straightened up the closet and washed enough windows to know that that's not a full-time job around the house. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be opportunities in the future. I'm not sure what areas, if it be college athletics, I don't know. But I really haven't had time to focus on that because we've been so tied up into things here in Athens and trying to keep the program afloat and moving in the right direction.
President Moorhead, again, kind of follow up on what Seth asked you a second ago. Obviously, this is a prime job in the athletic director world. I was just kind of curious if any potential candidates have already kind of reached out to you or your office.
I haven't spoken directly or indirectly with any potential candidates. I'm sure as this process unfolds, that will happen. There are a number of channels where that will be possible to take place. Michael Luthy, who heads the UGA search group, will be managing this search for me. And we'll certainly establish some channels of communication that will make that possible. I obviously have a lot of contacts serving not only in a leadership role with the SEC and working with Commissioner Sankey, but also at the NCAA level on the NCAA Board of Governors. So I will use those contacts as needed to ensure that those channels remain open. So we'll just see how the process plays out.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go to Chip Towers with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and then Mike Griffith with Dog Nation.
If I could first ask Jerry, just interested in your timeline here, your statement that sounded like you were aiming for a quick turn on this. Generally, do you have an ideal timeline? And if I could ask Greg something real quick after Mr. Moorhead answers.
Right.
I haven't established a firm timeline, but I obviously want this to move along expeditiously. I don't want this to drag out for, you know, months and months and months into the future. But we need to have a sufficient enough timeline to make sure that the advisory committee is able to advise me on all of the significant candidates that have an interest in the job.
And Greg, making sure I'm clear, it sounds like that you were leaning pretty hard in this direction before COVID hit and maybe stayed on because of COVID. So I understand that you might have retired at the end of the fiscal year had COVID not hit first. And secondly, is there one or two things out there that have that you really want to get around to doing in retirement?
Oh, wow. You know, I'll answer the last part of that first. There's nothing to, you know, from a retirement standpoint. Again, I haven't really thought about those things, Chip, moving forward. You know, we'll just let things be dictated as they develop and everything. But, you know, I mean, I remember the president and I were together in Nashville at the SEC basketball tournament, as many of you were. And, you know, timing's everything in life, and that just wasn't the right time during that time. So, you know, now's the right time. But again, I appreciate everything the president's done. And, you know, it's we've had a lot of discussions on this, and I appreciate his desire to want me to stay on and everything, but it's just time now. But certainly COVID stepped in and kind of, you know, messed up a lot of people with their plans and everything, but everything always turns out for the right reason. And that's where we are today.
If I could add something to what Greg has said, Chip, I really think it's been extremely important to have had Greg in this role since COVID hit in March. And I think if you talk to Greg Sankey, our SEC commissioner, he would say the same thing, because having individuals like Mitch Barnhart at Kentucky and Greg McGarrity at Georgia, seasoned athletic directors in the room on a lot of these calls, with and without presidents, as we had to make a number of difficult decisions in figuring out how we restart athletics and how we restart it and when we restart it. It was important to have Greg. And then it was important, I think, for our own athletic department to have him as we had to implement the plan that the NCAA and the SEC authorized us to move forward on. So, yes, I'd love to have had Greg stay longer, but it was really important to have him during this significant part of the pandemic. And we can all hope that we'll see a vaccine in the near future that begins to get distributed, and that we begin in the coming months to turn the corner on this pandemic. But it's been a challenge for me at the university level, and I know it's been a challenge for Greg, certainly been a challenge for our commissioner. But I think having some seasoned individuals has helped a lot.
Thank you.
I think we're back to Mike Griffith.
Thanks, Claude. Greg, I know you've done a lot over the last 10 years. I know you don't have a list in front of you, but could you reflect on some of the key, I don't know if contributions or movements or decisions? I mean, obviously, Georgia is in a very advantageous place, all things considered right now. When you look back, and it's time to do that, Greg, don't dodge the question. What are some of the things that you're proud of that you've accomplished over the last 10 years?
You know, Mike, it's interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, I was thinking about the top three or four moments. You know, I think back to the concert in Sanford Stadium back in 2013. I think it's the first time and maybe the only time everyone will leave Sanford Stadium happy. But that night, that environment was just magical, and, you know, it's just a rewarding experience. But the top three, had to be, in my mind, Notre Dame in 17, going to Chicago. I remember the president and I, we were together, and we were in Chicago Thursday night. We rode to South Bend on Friday, had a tour of the stadium, a nice lunch, and then went up to our hotel up in, I think it was right on the Lake Erie. One of the Great Lakes, and that game was just remarkable. And then to be followed by the Rose Bowl, I think that was just something that was just monumental the whole week. It was like fantasy land, and to win the game and advance to Atlanta and to be in the Rose Bowl, winning that game. But, you know, the best was Notre Dame last year in my mind. Kevin Butler and I were texting earlier about that experience, because he and I were standing together in the west end zone on the field, and you had the national anthem going, you had the flyover, you had just a beautiful weather, you had the new lights. You know, that day was so magical. I think all of us that were there knew that this, everything came together in a perfect way. And it was one of those times to where you just kind of shake your head and say, you know, we need to remember this, because it was, as I told Kevin, it's probably the most emotional I've ever been, being on the field during the anthem and see it all unfold. But, you know, those are the big stage moments that I'll remember. But there's so many others, Mike. I mean, just being able to work alongside great people and see what's happened recently with facilities and the way our donors have responded financially to really pay for everything has been really rewarding. But there's so many things. We could take up the whole call with this. But those are a few of the highlights.
Thank you. Right, let's go to Dean Leggy with Dog Post and then Jake Rowe with 247 Sports.
Jerry, I want to ask you, what kind of pressure do you get at your from boosters, or from boosters is probably the wrong word, Georgia partisans, about success in athletics? And how complicated is it to deal with that in a fundraising capacity for the university? How important are athletics to the trajectory of fundraising at the university?
I hear about it a lot. And, you know, sometimes the criticisms are justified and make sense. Sometimes they come from a perspective of people not having the knowledge or the background that Gregor or I may have on the issue. And to me, that's one of the things I'm really going to miss when Greg leaves. He probably won't miss it, but it's having to deal with text messages from me at 11 p.m. Or calls even on holidays when somebody is upset about something. And he's always been calm and steady and had the right information to give me that's allowed me to explain and navigate some of these concerns that you hear from time to time. But clearly, I think when people are happy about the success of our athletic program, it tends to have a positive impact on the feelings that they have for the University of Georgia, and therefore the support that they provide to the University of Georgia. I don't think it's inextricably linked. I think we have a lot of donors that give to the university because they love the university. And we have some donors that give to athletics solely because they care about athletics. But I think most people care about both, and they really like it when they see Georgia ranked in the top 15 of the best public research universities in America. And then they see our football team ranked very high in the national polls as well. I think there's a certain pride level, and it makes my job easier. Certainly when we're able to be out and to have the sort of donor events that we've had many of over the last several years.
Greg, wanted to ask you, obviously this your position can be kind of a thankless position and it's in its nature, but if you could write your own legacy, if you could be the guy that just put it out there for now to the end of time, what would that be? What would you want your time at Georgia to be characterized as?
Oh, Jake, just to make this place a little bit better. We all understand we're just temporary holders of these positions. And, you know, when I entered back in the summer of 10, you know, things were kind of messy. And it took a long time to work with staff and try to reestablish some relationships and try to get things back on track from an administrative level. And that took some time and effort. But, you know, I mean, others are right what they want. I really haven't reflected much on that much, Jake, other than just saying that, you know, you wanted to come in every day, give it your best shot and do the best you could and let the chips fall where they may. But if you can leave and just say you made it just a little bit better, I think that's that would be all I would want on my I guess summary of my performance.
Well, I would add one important thing, which was fiscal responsibility. I think Greg over the years took some criticism for the fact that we had reserves. And some of you may remember the presentations that Ryan Nesbitt, our treasurer, made about the importance of a 501c3 having reserves for a rainy day. Well, it's been pouring the last 8 or 9 months, and having those reserves has put us in a much better position than many other major athletic programs in the country that chose to go deeply in debt and not to have anything in reserve. So I appreciate the fiscal responsibility that Greg provided to the Athletic Association, along with many other things, of course.
Hey, let's go to Augusta Stone with the Red and Black, and then Brandon Sudge with the Macon Telegraph.
Greg, I want to know, what's been the most challenging part of leading the Athletic Association through the COVID-19 pandemic in your last few months here? And then along that line, what's a positive aspect you've been able to take from the difficulties of the year?
Well, Augusta, I think the toughest part is, you know, athletics is all about teamwork and togetherness and huddles and locker rooms, and you know, we just haven't been able to experience that. That's been the most difficult thing because, I mean, the president and I aren't traveling this year because we're not technically essential and in the bubble. And so those are the difficult things. I mean, I remember the president and I were texting each other on the first road game. It was like, you know, we've never experienced that before. So we've had to learn how to adjust. And so has everyone else. I mean, you've had to adjust. Our students have had to adjust. Our faculty, and being able to pivot as quickly as the university has done is really a great story to tell. But everybody's had to adjust, and I think it's made it very difficult. I think the positive part of it is made us realize that we should be very grateful and thankful for things we probably took for granted. Maybe waiting in line at the concession stand or at a restroom, or maybe being a little in a parking jam. You know, we would cherish those things right now, or go to a tailgate. So I think the positive thing is when we do get back to normal, that I think people hopefully will be more understanding, will be more patient. You know, I know that's a wish. I don't know if that'll come true, but I just hope people will sit back and realize and look back on their time here and realize that the things we probably took for granted just are not taken for granted anymore. And we'll appreciate those experiences there. But the only way we could really do that is experience what we're going through right now, which nobody loves. And so I'm hoping that'll be the positive out of this, and that athletics in general may be a little bit more quiet, so to speak, in the world of social media and these things. And again, I'm as hopeful thinking. I'm not so sure that'll happen, but I'm just hoping that will lead into maybe a different perspective on things. Thanks for the question.
Of course. Thank you.
Hey, Greg, so I wanted to ask you about Josh and Garice. So when you hired them in those roles, what did you see from them? What do you feel like they can do in this interim position? And then also, when you promoted Josh in January, did you do that with the retirement in your head, like in mind?
Well, you know, we had to get Josh back twice. I remember at one time he was actually in Dallas, Texas, fixing to accept a job with Jimbo Fisher at FSU. So we had to call him back and get him back in the fold. And then when he went off to be the athletic director at Millsaps and later at ULM, you know, we got him back again because we knew that he was a vital part of our program. And, you know, when he wasn't here, we really missed his enthusiasm. And he was kind of like a Pied Piper. He had a lot of followers. You know, great leaders have a lot of followers. And he was able to cultivate a large group of student workers and others that just enjoyed being around him. So his personality was contagious, and we really missed that. And He's brought that back to our program and is very popular among the staff. And he's just wired the right way. And the same with Derice. I tell you, folks, she is a superstar on the rise. Derice is so valuable to us. And, you know, having served at Florida in a backup role, you realize how important those people are to your program to make the athletic director's job a bit easier. And Derice is just absolutely phenomenal. And I'm so glad the president did what he did on the interim basis, because that's a great 1-2 punch. Okay. But, you know, Josh had ascended to that role. I felt like it was important for him to receive that kind of recognition and kind of acknowledgement that he was, the number two person here. And, the title goes along with that, but his responsibilities grew and he represented me when I wasn't able to be at athletic directors meetings or things of that nature. So, you know, very much like Jeremy Foley did for me at the University of Florida, I wasn't in the chair, but I was pretty close to it. So I was able to experience a lot of things that I would not have experienced unless somebody had been a great mentor to me. And that's all I wanted to do, really, to all our staff, is just mentor them and help them achieve their dreams. And what could I do to help them out?
Okay, we're going to ask Greg to stick around just for a couple more questions. We're going to excuse President Moorhead, who has some other appointments. Before the president steps away, though, I have one question for Greg. The book on the windowsill behind your desk there, what, I can't read the whole title. Would you read that? What is the title of that book?
Okay, Claude, you're setting me up here. It's the Norton Anthology of Poetry, okay? I have it up there. I brought it out because I think it's kind of interesting to have, but Claude and I were looking at it, and as I opened it, and I very rarely open it, in all honesty, okay, I found out my schedule at the University of Georgia in 1973, the spring quarter. We were on quarters back then, and I had three exams on the same day, and I was making an appeal to my advisor, George Abney, back in the J school back then. So I just thought I'd have a little fun with the Norton Anthology of Poetry back there, okay?
Well, George Abney was an iconic figure at the University of Georgia.
Phenomenal man, I'll tell you that.
President Moorhead, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, and I appreciate it. Sorry, I'm going to go see a donor right now that's on campus, but thank you all.
Thanks, President.
All right, let's we'll take a couple more questions for Greg here. Let's go to maybe Zach Klein at WSB, and then David Paschal at Chattanooga Times Free Press.
Hey, Greg, considering this is obviously one of the elite jobs in college athletics, and there's no doubt the next man or woman who takes that chair will be ultra qualified. And I know you're going to tell me they don't need your advice, but if he or she were to reach out to you for one thing you've learned along the way in that chair at that school, what would it be for them?
Well, two things really, Zach. One is to treat others with respect and dignity. Acknowledge and appreciate those from your custodial staff to, you know, your highest paid employees. And just be kind of a regular person. Be yourself. But probably more important is just exercise patience. You know, when I first got here, I wasn't the most patient person in the world, and I wanted to micromanage, and I did some self-evaluations with our staff, and those came back as, you know, you need to relax a little bit. And so I learned from my staff, because I wasn't afraid to find out what I needed to learn and listen. So I would just say, first and foremost, be nice to people. You don't have to say yes to everything, but when you say no, it's how you say no. But I think patience is something that's really missing in college athletics now, as we're seeing across college football now. And before you make a decision, you have to be 100% certain that it's not going to work. And we're not perfect. You know, no one's ever batted 1,000 in the hiring process. But I will say this, I was talking to the president about it earlier, that even for those head coaches that we've parted ways with, they're quality people. I mean, you go down the list, and there's not one coach we've had here that you would say is a bad person or did things the wrong way. And one thing we should be proud of is that we've had great people that have represented Georgia in the right way, and we've been so fortunate there. But patience is probably in short demand right now, but it needs to be a strength of a program.
Greg, a legacy and non-legacy question, if I could. Your legacy will always include the decision you made late in 2015 with Mark and Kirby. It's not every AD that makes the decision to remove a coach who was winning, I guess, 10 games a year for the last 5 years, and we know how it's played out with the three straight SECs. But personally for you, how difficult and trying were those days?
Oh, God. Those are the worst parts of our job because, you know, it not only affects one person, it's a whole network of people. And, you know, I remember sitting in this office right here and Mark was sitting right behind me. Carla was with me and it's 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning. You know, hell, I took it. I mean, I was very emotional. I had a hard time, you know, talking about Mark. I'm sitting across from someone that is without question, maybe the greatest person you'll ever come up, you'll ever meet. I mean, a person that was selfless, that his story, the adoption of his children. I mean, my gosh, I mean, it's so difficult. And I really struggle with that. And it wasn't easy to do, but that's the tough thing about being in leadership positions. Sometimes it's not the best thing for individuals. You have to do what's best for the institution. And at that time, I thought it was the best thing for us. And but those are the very difficult things. And it's no fun doing that. Trust me, you don't sleep the night before and you dread it. But I just thought that things had to change. And, you know, the jury will be out for forever on those type things, David. But, you know, that's sort of the way things kind of happened during those periods of time.
And the other I wanted to ask about was just men's basketball. I know it is a challenge and you've made a change there. And it's kind of a historical head scratcher when you consider Atlanta and the talent right there. And I know y'all have had more success than Georgia Tech. I'm not bringing them into it, but I mean, it is just, you know, what is your thoughts on men's basketball and how that's been the last decade?
You know, David, we've been to the NCAA since my tenure. We've been to the NCAA tournament twice and we're 0-2. You know, I just think that Georgia needs, you may not be in it every year, but you need to certainly be in the discussion about that. And that's never been a consistent part of Georgia basketball ever. I mean, Coach Durham was awesome, but we consistently weren't really a top flight team. And we've had periods of greatness, periods of really good teams, but it was almost like a yo-yo. You were up one year and down the next. And I just felt like that Georgia hopefully could be consistent in that manner. And I remember Coach Fox, when I came in, you know, he had told me that, you know, he had a long, long runway. And I know President Adams at that time had a long runway with Mark because he had to turn the program around that was, you know, 9 or 10 years. But after that time, we reached certain points and I just felt like we weren't getting there and it was time for a change. And I just think it's so difficult that when you're trying to do something, it's kind of like Tom Black in volleyball. You go down the hallway at the Ramsey Center and you walk down the right side of the hallway and you're seeing Jack Bowerly with Olympic champions and gold medals and everything 30, 40 years here. And you go down the other side, really nothing in volleyball. And what Tom Black has done is absolutely remarkable here, especially having a good fall. And, you know, I think Tom is just going to be remarkable and we need Tom Black to stay at the University of Georgia. But, I think some sports is so much more difficult when there's nothing to really fall back on as far as historically. And I think that's a challenge in basketball. It takes time. And Mark was given a long runway and you know, I feel the same way with Tom. It takes time to really establish a foothold and to make things work. And so, you know, I mean, if you watched our second half, I know, it was just our first game, but you saw a different team the first half and second half Sunday afternoon. So I think things will turn out perfectly fine in basketball.
Thanks, Greg.
Hey, let's go to Vance Levy with Bulldog Illustrated and then Roddy Nabulsi, UGASports.com.
Greg, first, congratulations on your retirement, and thank you for your 10 years of a steady hand for the university. You basically have been in the business for 30 years. What changed the most in those 30 years, and what do you foresee being the biggest changes in the next 30 years?
You know, Vance, I think the what's really hurt our, not only our profession, but the lives of young people is the social media trend. Kirby mentioned it the other day at the presser about Demetrius Robinson, about, you know, the pressure that young people feel because it's sort of an instant reaction to certain things. And, you know, people hide behind other names. And, you know, back in the day, you used to pick up the phone or call someone or do things in a different way. And, you know, the accountability is just not there. And I think when you're seeing the lack of accountability and people aren't afraid to say things on a iPhone or things like that, you know, certainly I don't think they would say that on the street if they passed you on the street. So I think the sad thing about it, so many young people are attached at the hip to these devices, and there's so many bad things out there. You know, growing up, thank goodness when I was in college, we didn't have any of that stuff. And so I think that's probably been harmful in some ways, even though it's the way of our society now, and that's how we kind of function now. But I hate the negativity that's in there. Vance, I think moving forward that, you know, we've got to get out of this pandemic or there's going to be serious problems in college athletics. And we're going to be okay this year. But if we go through another year of 20,000 people in Sanford Stadium and 1,600 people in Stegman and 400 or so at Foley Field, you know, it's going to be hard to make ends meet. And so we're fortunate to be able to have the resources this year, but that's certainly not set up to do it multiple years. So I think the concern there financially going down the road to support everything you're supporting is going to be really important. And, you know, down the road, you know, who knows what the NCAA will look like. And I just hope we all get through this pandemic sooner than later, because it certainly doesn't need to stretch into the fiscal year 22. Are there going to be severe consequences to really everyone, much more than they are right now across the college space?
Hey, Greg, two quick questions for you. Well, first, congratulations on a great career, and speak on behalf of everybody. We really appreciate your availability whenever we had questions. The responsiveness has been fantastic. Two things I'd like to get ask you. One, did the voluntary retirement incentive program have any bearing on your decision? And two, if Josh Brooks were to ask you for a letter of recommendation, what would you write?
Well, first, no, we're not eligible for the voluntary retirement. I sure wish that was in play, but since we don't receive state funds, we were not eligible for that. So it had nothing to do with my retirement. I wish it had, because I'm sure there might have been others that would have jumped on that in a heartbeat. But that had to do with a reduction in state obligations to institutions. But since there are no state funds involved in athletics, it was not applicable to athletics. And say, what's the thing about, what's the second part?
If Josh Brooks were to come to you and say, look, I'd need a letter of recommendation to give to President Moorhead and the search committee, sure. Could you share with us some of the things you would write in that letter for him?
Sure. You know, I think those of us that have come up through the profession in the, I call it the grunt stage, to where you start by picking up trash and you're doing the little things and you see what it takes to make an operation work. And if you've been in the trenches, you have an appreciation for those that are in the trenches right now. So I think his ability to see the big picture is outstanding. I think those of you that have met Josh and have worked with him, you know, he's really great to work with. He's very easy to get to know. You know, I've seen him in difficult situations, to where he's had to handle situations that might have been pretty complex there. but I think he handles those well. He's very smart. He's very creative, as you all know. I think he has a wonderful family. You know, Lily and the boys are dynamic, and I see his boys running around the tracks and having our son kind of grow up in a college environment. We know that kind of being inside the ropes is a perk that we all have, but he's honest as the day is long. He's just a good person. People get along with him. He's not a big timer. He's not a helicopter supervisor. You know, he realizes that we're all in support roles here. And while we have to say no at certain times, you know, all our job is to make people better. You know, we're not in it for ourselves. You know, what can we do to help coaches and student athletes have a great experience and do our best to make our staff feel supported and doing whatever we can do to make their dreams come true. But I think he's wired in that manner and has tremendous respect among his peers.
Okay, we got time. We're going to take two more quick questions. If you have one, let's go to Jay Black, WSB Radio, and then Connor Riley with Dog Nation. Jay?
Greg, anything you didn't accomplish that you really wanted to?
Oh, I think there's always going to be things, Jay, that didn't happen that you wish would be completed. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I really hadn't thought about that. You know, sure, you'd like to have a few more rings and things of that nature, and you realize how hard it is to win championships, whether it's an SEC or national championship, and to come so close so many times across the board in all sports. You know, that's something you wish you could have had happen. But, you know, one thing I always despise was the shoulda, coulda, and woulda environment, you know. Should have had, you know, if only that ball had have been fair, if only we had have caught that, you know, at the end of the day, those things didn't happen. So why even go there? All it does is take up time and burn energy. So you've got to flush those situations down the toilet and move on to the next. But, you know, sure, there's a lot of things that were left undone, but, you know, there's not much you can do about those now other than learn from them and move forward.
Hey, Greg, first, congratulations on your retirement. And second, Jerry Moorhead praised your sort of financial responsibilities and how well you had done in that aspect. How difficult was it to sort of at times show restraint and keep the money flowing while also knowing you have to continue to build facilities and update them and upgrade them as well?
You know, Connor, that's a great question because, you know, I was kind of received a lot of criticism for maybe not doing certain things, but I think what gets lost in the discussion is a lot of times, you know, athletic directors want to accomplish what the head coaches want to accomplish. Okay. And certain things are important to some coaches and some are not. So it's not the athletic director telling a coach what's going to happen. It works the other way in my mind. It'd be like me going out to the golf course and telling Chris, hey, Chris, we're going to redo all the greens and sand traps out there. Okay. Cause that's what I want to do. And Chris Hack would say, well, no, I'd rather spend it at the practice green. So I'd rather listen to coaches on articulate what do they want, what's important to them, and then we'll get it done. And I think that we could say on the record that that's happened probably 99% of the time is we've been able to react to the vision that the coaches have for their program. So I think that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. It's not the athletic director making the decisions on what we do. It's basically getting with a coach, understanding what they need, why they need it, and then developing a financial structure to make it all work. And thank God the McGill Society's here because every facility, I mean, we're up to, I think, almost $64 million in gifts and pledges for this Butts Mirror edition here for an $80 million project. I mean, we're still generating significant donations. So to think that our donors paid for the indoor building, the West End Zone, and they're going to pay for this as well eventually, and not taking on any long-term debt is a tremendous tribute to those members of the McGill Society, because otherwise, you'd have to tell a coach, well, you know, we can't afford it now, or I have to raise ticket prices X amount to do this. But, you know, to get back to your question, Connor, is you take the advice and the counsel from your head coach and what's important to them. And then it's our job to make that happen. And if things don't happen, then, you know, that's our problem and we deal with it. But we've been very fortunate to be good listeners and do what our coaches have asked us to do from a facility standpoint. And I'm really proud of that aspect of our program. And unfortunately, others think that you should drain, you know, you've got all this money sitting there. Why don't you spend it on X, Y, and Z? And, you know, it's just like you and I, it's like everyone else. You know, we're not going to dip into our savings unless we really have to do it. And so we've just been very fortunate, but I think that's something we all take a great amount of pride in, is the amount of construction we've been able to do over the last decade.
Greg, thanks for your time this morning. I know everybody appreciates it. And you can go back to your poetry book now and finish that up. Okay. And thanks to everybody for calling in on the Zoom this morning.
You know, and if y'all need, you know, I'm always available. So just call me if you need me. Okay. I'll be here the rest of the month. Okay. Y'all be well.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Claude.
The Boss has been brought to you by Dirty Girl Mixers. Get your mix fix. And by RecTech Grills. Join the RecTech lifestyle. The Boss podcast is a copyrighted presentation of Big Dog Productions Incorporated. You can find us online at bigdogproductions.tv. For more episodes of The Boss, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or log on to thebosspodcast.net.